I'm Carson Sestouli of Fangraphs.com, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, brought to you by Homestand Sports. I am Carson Sestouli, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. With me is not Dave Cameron, because Dave Cameron is no longer employed by Fangraphs.com. Instead, he is employed by the San Diego Padres, which front office he lobbied all offseason to sign Eric Hosmer, and he was successful in that endeavor. Congratulations, former host, co-host of this podcast, David Cameron. With me is a great improvement over Dave Cameron. He is a full-time, he's also a full-time employee at Fangraphs.com, and it's Craig Edwards. Craig Edwards, you are present, I gather.
I am here.
Good. Hey, you know what, Craig? Hello, first of all. Secondly, here's how we usually begin this program, is by mentioning our patron. Some people say sponsor. I like to say patron, Homestand Sports. Homestand Sports, they're the ones who facilitate the Pitch Talks events. Here's another thing I say, is that the next Pitch Talks event is June 14th. It features not only Dan Schulman, but also, for example, some Blue Jays alumni, including most notably probably Pedro Martinez, but also Lloyd Mosby, who himself is notable. And then what I'll do is I'll say the time, 6 to 9 p.m. I'll say the date again, June 14th. I'll probably go back to the time, 6 to 9 p.m. And I'll say you can get tickets at homestand.ca. Homestand.ca. Get your tickets, homestand.ca. I think I've covered that. Does that seem right?
To me, yes.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel like people are probably going to buy tickets now?
I hope so. They should.
Yeah, they should. Hey, you've also, this is what I also want to say, you've not only attended one, you've participated in the Pitch Talk event.
Yeah, I've done two in Chicago and one in St. Louis.
Now, what do you think that the Pitch Talks wants out of someone like Craig Edwards?
What do you think
you bring to the table, Craig?
They just want me to get up there and spit some hot fire. They just want some good baseball takes. I don't know. I mean, you know, much like this, you know, that people ask questions and you answer them to the best of your ability. You know, if you want to, you know, have a few drinks, you can have a few drinks. It's, you know, somewhat casual, but, you know, everybody gets their questions in and, you know, specific to, you know, like in Chicago, it's more Cubs, White Sox. In St. Louis, it was more Cardinals. I'm sure in Toronto, it is focused on the Blue Jays, and you get the specific type of questions, as well as general baseball stuff.
Did you decide to or not to drink while on stage?
To drink while on stage.
Did you drink deeply, or did you nurse a beverage?
I drank the appropriate amount.
That's what Craig offered. Craig Edwards offers anyone is the appropriate amount of whatever they want. Hopefully you provide must follow the appropriate amount of objective analysis regarding the Toronto Blue Jays. That's why this podcast exists. We are dispassionate. We have no feelings, essentially, is what it is. We are unfeeling robots who analyze baseball, and we analyze Toronto Blue Jays baseball right here. Let me tell you about the most recent week in Toronto Blue Jays baseball, which, first of all, Toronto appears to have endured a number of unpleasant events recently. I suppose I have nothing, no kind of wisdom to share in that regard, Craig, except to acknowledge it. It sounds terrible. I am utterly unqualified to comment on it at any length, so I won't. And instead, I'll do the thing for which I'm moderately more qualified, which is talk about baseball, okay? Does that seem reasonable? Okay, all right. That said, what the Toronto Blue Jays did most recently is to go 4-3 in the last 7 days since we've recorded. They benefited greatly from playing the Kansas City Royals, but then they suffered from having to play the New York Yankees at New York. They lost 3 out of 4, which is not particularly surprising. For example, against Luis Severino with Jaime Garcia pitching, they only had a 30% chance of winning. They lost 5-1. Their odds, however, their playoff odds, remain largely unchanged this last week. Their chances of winning the division have gone down. Their chances of winning the wild card have gone up. It's a wash. They're near 50%, around 43%. I don't know. You actually wrote about the Blue Jays before the season began, and you're like, hey, they've done a pretty good job of putting together a roster, given the constraints that were placed on them. And it seems like, I don't know, 13-8, 86 expected wins, you know, 50-50 chance of making the playoffs. I think that they would have taken that after, you know, 3 weeks of the baseball season, 4 weeks of the baseball season, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they've gotten off to sort of the exact start that they needed to. You know, they're in a spot where if things go south, they could be sellers at the trade deadline, but right now they're positioning themselves to be buyers, which is where you want to be. And you know, in potentially Josh Donaldson's final season, you want to make use of his tremendous skills as much as possible while you have him. So I think that especially given that, you know, he's not even at full strength and not playing as much as maybe you'd like him to. So I mean, if you lose your best player for a bit of time and still manage to put yourself in playoff position, that seems like pretty good. And a few of their acquisitions have worked out so far.
Yeah. Now it's true that a few of their acquisitions have worked out. I spoke last week, I don't know, with some nameless, faceless sort of person. We spoke about Aledmys Diaz and Jervis Solarte. Oh, yeah, it was with Eric Longenagan, who I love. Those are two interesting characters. Of course, you know about Diaz. You used to be the managing editor for Viva Albertos, a St. Louis Cardinals website. Diaz was someone you watched with some regularity, I assume. What he and Solarte have in common is that they do not really have a lot in the way of premium tools, and yet they've somehow been able to parlay it into, at least at this point, brief major league careers. And Diaz had one quite good season with the Cardinals, didn't he?
Yeah, it was quite a surprise because the Cardinals had actually removed him from the 40-man roster the previous season. He had come over from Cuba and just showed some skills, but wasn't quite ready to play due to the way he came over. He had a very long layoff and then sort of had a bunch of tryouts and sort of hurt himself a little bit and wasn't ready to go for a while. And then, you know, when he finally did come up, it was after, you know, Johnny Peralta had got injured. They even signed, I think, Ruben
Tejeda,
play shortstop, and then that didn't work out, and then so they gave Diaz a shot, and he was great for, you know, almost a full season.
Yeah.
But then the following year, he was set to be the starting shortstop, and he just didn't hit at all. And so he's got some good skills. He can usually put the bat on the ball. When he first came up, he was doing a very good job of making good contact, and last year it didn't work out the same way, and ended up with the Cardinals letting him go to Toronto. They weren't really willing to see if he would sort of recapture the magic that he had the previous season, and he's yet to recapture it thus far, although he has hit a few homers. And, you know, he's not the greatest defensive shortstop, but he's a guy who could play multiple infield positions. Not that different from Yan Jervis Solarte, you know, sort of two guys who you give a shot to and see where it goes. And it's obviously worked out so far with Solarte, not so much with Diaz, but, you know, when you're taking risks on lower level guys, that's sort of what happens.
Yeah, no, actually, Solarte is among the team leaders in WAR. He's up there with Teoscar Hernandez, which I don't think probably anyone would have expected, but Hernandez has been playing quite a bit of left field recently, and he's had quite a bit of success on contact. It's only 40 plate appearances, so it's not a very substantive sample. I will sometimes dwell on those players at the top of the WAR leaderboard for the Toronto Blue Jays, but why I've invited you here today, apart from your many virtues, is to perhaps lead us in discussion of the player at the very bottom of the WAR leaderboard for the Blue Jays, and because he's probably, I would characterize him as a frustrating sort of player, in that he appears to have many talents, and yet I guess he also has some conspicuous flaws, which ultimately can undermine him in some cases. The player about whom I speak, Craig Edwards, is Randall Grichuk, and the reason why you will have some familiar with him is because, as I noted, you were tasked with covering the Cardinals for some time, and Randall Grichuk until this winter was a St. Louis Cardinals player. So
that's correct.
Allow me just to sort of unload my own file on Randall Grichuk, and nothing that he's done this year. I mean, everything he's done this year basically supports this basic profile, right? I'm interested for your immediate reaction, and then we can get to the why of it, I guess, later. Randall Grichuk is a player who is capable of handling center field. He's athletic. He's probably above average in terms of foot speed, and his power on contact appears to be considerable, above average to plus. And all of this is very promising. Given all of this, it's surprising that he never appeared on like a top 100 prospect list, and yet that's the case. And perhaps the reason he never appeared on one of those is because he has considerable problems with swing and miss. And those problems with swing and miss have largely defined his 2018 campaign to date. He's essentially lost half a win for the Toronto Blue Jays. There is something very tantalizing about Randall Grichuk. Those are the things I've said. Let's treat that as a prompt to which you will now respond because you're more qualified to speak about him.
I would say I would agree with a lot of what you say. Very talented, can handle center field, good runner, has tremendous power when he can make contact, the trouble with him has always been making that contact. As far as never appearing on a top 100 list, he made the majors pretty quickly for a high schooler, and once he made it up to the Cardinals, if he had stayed one more year in the minors, maybe he might have made a few top 100 lists, but the Cardinals brought him up in 2014, and I think he lost his prospect status then. And so it made it a situation where he wasn't going to get sort of the prospect notoriety that he might have otherwise. But he still might not have made any top 100 lists, even if that were the case. But more relevant and pressing now, he just, in order to be, a really good offensive player, in terms of pitch recognition, you have to, be able to sort of discern from the fastball and the breaking pitch. And that's something that Grichuk has struggled to do. And then even after that, you have to discern if it is a breaking pitch, whether or not it's a ball or a strike. And having difficulty with both of those things has made it very, very hard for him to succeed, at a high level. He's, despite all of what he's done, even with striking out about 30% of the time and not taking a whole lot of walks, he's been a roughly average hitter as a Major League Baseball player, and that makes him a slightly average to above average player overall. Now, right now, he's clearly below replacement, given what he's done so far, because he's not really hitting for power, and he's not really getting on base. Although it's somewhat surprising that he's walked at a high rate. It almost makes you think that perhaps he's being a little bit too patient and not attacking pitches, particularly fastballs, which would help him break out a little bit. If he gets a fastball and he swings, the ball has the potential to go a long way. So I think that, obviously Toronto hasn't seen the best of what Grichuk has to offer so far, but I think that there's still considerable room for him to do much better than what he's shown so far.
Hey, I want to say something. So you said a couple interesting things there. Despite yourself, Greg Edwards. Let's see. You mentioned that the Cardinals brought him up somewhat early, and I guess I hadn't necessarily remembered this, but it is true. He in 2013, he had played for the Angels. He played a double A as a 21-year-old, which I think would render him one of the younger players at that level. Then that offseason, there was a trade between the Cardinals and the Angels.
Yes, David Freese and Fernando Salas for Randall Grichuk and Peter Borjos.
Are you doing that from your head?
Yes.
Congratulations. That's a great skill. And so he played a lot at AAA as a 22-year-old, again, probably rendering him one of the younger players at that level. And then the Cardinals called up. What was the – the Cardinals called him up, and I think, as you noted, I think he lost his rookie eligibility at that point. What was the – do you recall the logic at that time for calling him up? I mean, was the idea that he was ready? Was there a hole in the outfield?
Yeah, there's definitely a hole in the outfield. I can't remember the exact circumstances, but Alan Craig the right fielder and was hurt a lot and was not performing. So they, you know, cycled a few guys in and out of that spot before the Cardinals eventually traded away Alan Craig. Oscar Tavares got some playing time as well. And so they came up towards the middle part of the year. Then he went back down, and then he came back up towards the end of the season. And he really didn't show the same power that he was able to demonstrate later. He was sort of I wouldn't say slap happy, but he hit a lot of singles. And that is the sort of thing that endeared himself to Mike Matheny at the time. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up starting in the playoffs that year over Oscar Tavares. So he lost his prospect. Actually, he might not have lost his prospect eligibility till the following season. But because, you know, he was only okay in the minors that season and only okay in the majors that season, he wasn't going to make a whole lot of prospect lists for the following season when he eventually came up and hit very well during the 2015 year.
Yeah, and actually 2015 he was particularly good, but also 2016 he wasn't he wasn't an absolute lost cause. He was still worth two wins and fewer than 500 plate appearances, which suggests that, you know, as you noted, like, obviously there's a lot of swing and miss, but he compensates for it with excellent power on contact. That basic skill set was still present. But I don't know, was there a sense ever that maybe, like, the Cardinals had prematurely promoted him and that there was still development left? Or was the idea that this was basically what he was and maybe he would benefit from major league coaching or something to that effect?
It's hard to say what the right approach was. Obviously, he's gone back down to AAA in both 2016 and 2017. And so there's a question of, could you have avoided that by leaving him in the minors for longer and maybe helped him get pitch recognition there as opposed to watching him struggle in the majors and having him send him back down for sort of a refresher or whatever it is. I don't know what the right answer is. I think that, you know, they might have, you know, turned things over to him a little bit too quickly. But then, you know, when the 2017 season came and the Cardinals had signed Dexter Fowler to play center field, when you're a starter in a corner outfield spot, there's sort of less margin for error in terms of what you bring to the table with the bat. You can't be, it's harder to be an average hitting outfielder from a corner spot and still be average or better as a player. And Grichuk still, you know, came pretty close to that because of, you know, his solid base running and decent defense. But, you know, if you're not a center fielder, it's harder to sort of put up with the very long cold streaks that he would go through. But despite that, he still managed to hit, you know, 22 homers in three quarters of a season. So, I mean, the power still showed up.
Yeah, and, according to the projections as they stand now, the power is still expected to show up. Now, I think we had talked about this a little bit last night, and you said that the power is actually quite extraordinary.
Yeah, I mean, when he gets a hold of a ball, it goes a long way. You know, I think that he has a few of the longer home runs in Busch Stadium history. He has one of those swings where if you try to, you know, pump a fastball by him on the first pitch, or maybe if he's looking for a breaking ball and it hangs up there, you know, he crushes it. And, you know, he hits the ball hard when it's on the ground as well, but that's not as quite as beneficial.
Yeah, and I think we had sort of arrived at the conclusion when we spoke yesterday that Grichuk is actually interesting. He's one of the players sort of least well situated to benefit from what appears to be a juiced ball, because for him the question has never been power on contact. It's always been making contact. And so, for example, players like Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez and you know, Yonder. I don't know why I'm only naming Cleveland players. No specific affinity to Cleveland. I'm sure it's a wonderful place. But of course, there are a number of examples of players who are slighter of build, who do not have obvious physical strength, whose power numbers have increased. That's not really the case with Grichuk. Of course, we also live in an era when, you know, I mean, every year upon year, strikeout averages are always increasing. So it's not the ideal era for Randall Grichuk, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a tough spot because, you know, we hear a lot about the three true outcomes, you know, walks, strikeouts, and home runs, and he's only delivered on two of them, sort of missing out on the walks. And so if he walked a lot more, you know, his on-base percentage would have a much higher floor, and, you know, that combined with the power would really help him go, even if he was striking out 30% of the time. But not walking as much makes things a little bit more difficult for him. And, you know, if the ball, you know, wasn't juiced, you know, like you said, it's not going to impact his power. He's not the guy who is hitting a bunch to the warning track that all of a sudden, you know, the next year going over the fence. You know, he hits a lot of no doubters.
Right. Now, and you also mentioned the sort of dichotomy between plate discipline and then swinging and missing, right? And I know that when I talk about this with lead prospect analyst at FanGraphs, Eric Longenegger, we talk about different types of, you know, hit tools and why guys swing and miss, why they might have high strikeout rates. Sometimes it's because it's impossible for them, and, you know, like, I always think of, like, Alfonso Soriano and maybe another Cub, Javier Baez, is belonging to this particular club, where it's just impossible to lay off a certain type of pitch, right? And so there's that lack of pitch recognition. For other batters, it might just be, pitch recognition might be fine, it might just be a question of swinging through balls that are hittable. Do you have a sense that Grichuk is a victim of one or the other in particular, or is it a sort of a combination of the two?
I think it's more the pitch recognition than anything else. You know, he's got a, you know, a fairly quick bat. I don't think that he's missing the hittable ones, except, you know, maybe when it gets to two strikes and he's trying to protect against things. You know, he might chase a pitch that's sort of maybe in his wheelhouse, but maybe he was trying to look for the slider away or something, and so didn't catch up to the fastball. But I think that for the most part, it's just not really laying off the off-speed pitch, and then at the same time, not knowing if that off-speed pitch is going to be a strike or not. You know, if an off-speed pitch is going to be a strike, you know, it's, you know, fine and good to swing at it. But if you don't know if it's going to be off the plate or right down the middle, that's sort of Randall Grichuk's problem. You know, I think that when he swings on the first pitch and he's not fooled, he probably does pretty well. But I think that it's simply recognizing whether or not the ball's going to be in the strike zone that's the difficulty for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it does seem as though, it actually seems as though this year, just looking at some of the data, that he actually is perhaps having a little bit more success not swinging at pitches out of the zone. And, well, the results are the results are poor anyway.
Yeah. I mean, he's also just not swinging as much, which is unusual for him, I think.
Right.
And so maybe he's just not completely comfortable. But I think that, you know, if you're not swinging at the pitch outside the zone, you're not swinging at the pitch inside the zone, then maybe you're not, you're just not 100% confident in your swing.
If you don't swing at pitches inside the zone or outside the zone, do you hear a tree falling in the woods? I think is what you're getting at. Hey, listen, I want to introduce you to the week ahead, Craig Edwards, for the Toronto Blue Jays. It's composed largely of two series, one at home versus the Boston Red Sox and another at home versus the Texas Rangers. Despite the fact that they're at home against the Boston Red Sox, the odds are not necessarily great of victory there. We see a couple games around 50%, and then a start against Chris Sale, a game against Chris Sale in which they have roughly just a little over a one-third chance of winning. In Texas, the odds are much better, right around 60%. They will face, with Boston, they will face, starting on Tuesday, they will face Rick Porcello, and you actually conveniently wrote about Rick Porcello for today. If you were to provide a minute or less, the information that one would need to know about Rick Porcello, particularly the 2018 version, what would it be?
Well, I think that, you know, he still is throwing all the same pitches. He relies most on his two-seamer, but also has the four-seamer, the change, and the slider and the curve. But I think that he's sort of changed his pitch mix a little bit, and he's relying less on his four-seam fastball and more on his slider and change and a little bit less on his curve. And so he's throwing a lot more strikes, and he's using that sinker to get ahead. And that slider is becoming more of a frequently used a swing and miss pitch. And sort of the mix of going away from the four-seamer means more ground balls, means fewer homers, and pitching more in the strike zone means fewer walks. And that's been incredibly successful so far for Porcello this season.
Now, I'm also going to ask you about two other pitchers. In a span of 3 days, it appears. Now, these are the probable pitchers like a week out from now, so it's possible that it won't come to fruition. The Blue Jays are expected to face on the 28th Bartolo Colon with Texas, and then 2 days after that, April 30th, Lance Lynn on the Minnesota Twins. And I know that you have compared, I don't know if you've ever done it in print, you have actually compared Lance Lynn to Bartolo Colon before.
Yes, both of the...
What are the similarities those players possess?
Both of those pitchers rely almost exclusively on the fastball. Now, that it's not the exact same fastball. You know, it's a cutter, a four-seamer, a two-seamer. But both of those pitchers over the past 2 years are among the lead leaders, especially among starters, in throwing the fastball. And they sort of just try to mix up location and speeds a little bit. It's a pretty simple formula for both of those guys, to just sort of, beat you with, you know, the low 90s, high 80s, ball.
And would you like to know, that the Blue Jays, the Toronto Blue Jays, that's the team about which I'm speaking, thus far in the 2018 season have recorded the second best mark in terms of, weighted runs above average. For every 100 fastballs they've seen, it's the Cubs are first, and the Blue Jays are second. Perhaps this is
seems like a good sign.
Seems like a good sign for them. Hey, Craig Edwards, you have already fulfilled your obligation to the Pitch Talk Blue Jays podcast, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That has been Craig Edwards. He's a full-time employee at Fangraphs.com. I'm Carson Cistulli, and this has been the Pitch Talk Blue Jays podcast.